I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the ACLU fails to hold the parental rights bill from taking effect tomorrow. Plus, GOP Chair Jim Walsh joins us to talk about his efforts to stop Democrats from meddling with the other initiatives. And yes, we talk about those accusations against Semi Byrd. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A lot to get to today, although I'm going to start where I need to start. I have to make a correction from yesterday's show in gabbing about the ACLU lawsuit to stop the parental rights law. I said mistakenly the parental rights law is going to the ballot and the ACLU is trying to stop it from going to the ballot. But of course, that's not the case. It was already passed into law by the legislature and the ACLU was trying to halt it from taking effect on Thursday. So I apologize in talking about all the initiatives that I swapped a few of them around. But speaking of, after our show wrapped up yesterday, the ACLU lost its effort to stop the parental bill of rights from going into effect for Washington families on Thursday. So it will take effect tomorrow as initially planned. Now, the ACLU's lawsuit still continues to go forward, but what they wanted was essentially an emergency injunction because they said that the parental bill of rights would harm parents and would also harm LGBTQ and trans kids. I very much look forward to seeing what the argument they're going to make on that in terms of how it helps kids to keep their parents in the dark. So that's interesting. But a big win for parents, this from the Seattle Times. While parental rights law allowed to take effect despite opposition, the civil liberties groups, school district, youth services organizations, and others who are challenging the law did not show that it would create the kind of imminent harm necessary to warrant blocking it until a trial court judge can consider the matter. King County Superior Court Commissioner Mark Hillman said a hearing before the judge is scheduled for June 21st. This is interesting. Hillman said during the hearing that he was sympathetic to the concerns of the groups challenging the measure, but the harms they had alleged were only speculative. So kind of odd that he would say, I'm sympathetic to what you're saying, shows a little bit of bias there, but I'm glad he could come out on the right side of that decision and say, no, this is the will of voters and it's the will of Democrats. Democrats almost unanimously voted to pass the Parental Bill of Rights initiative into law. So it's the will of the legislature and it is the will of voters, and it will take effect tomorrow along with a new state law that codifies no state income tax and the police pursuit bill, which is a big one that we have been fighting to fix for several years, ever since it was passed in 2021, dramatically limiting the ability of police officers to pursue suspects. Man, you forget all the fighting you did to get it to that point and all the fighting a lot of people did to get it to this point. And so it's going to be a good day tomorrow for public safety in the state of Washington, a wonderful day for common sense and sanity. So certainly we'll talk about the police pursuit initiative and how it might change this crime crisis that we have on the show tomorrow. All right, meanwhile, this is interesting. Nicole, how did our morning go the last half hour before the show?
It was interesting.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
So I have a headache now because I just went 10 rounds with Jim Walsh over Semi Byrd. I have a lot of respect for Jim Walsh. So I divided this interview into two parts. We just taped it. I mean, literally minutes ago, we wrapped up taping with Jim. But on Friday, speaking of initiatives, Jim Walsh is challenging basically this warning label law. It was a law passed by Democrats with the sole intent of derailing anti-tax initiatives. Who pushes anti-tax initiatives? Conservatives. So Democrats, you know, they don't want anything challenging their one-party rule. So they passed a law that says, okay, if an anti-tax initiative makes it to the ballot, we get to put a little warning label on it that says how disastrous it'll be for the fiscal health of the state of Washington. And of course, they're going to write it in a way that makes people scared to repeal it because, oh, it'll get rid of all these things. So we have three initiatives that are going to the ballot in November, and they all have to do with an awful lot of revenue coming in from you and I to the state coffers. So, of course, there's the initiative to repeal the Climate Commitment Act, which is a carbon tax. There is the initiative to repeal the capital gains tax. And there is the initiative to make the long-term care tax optional. So what Jim Walsh is arguing and what his side is going to argue in court on Friday is not to get rid of these warning labels, but they're arguing whether the warning labels should even be applied to at least one of these initiatives, and for the other ones, making sure that those warning labels aren't written in a way that is completely biased. So here is the first part of our interview with GOP Chairman Jim Walsh. Jim Walsh, welcome back to Undivided.
Good to talk to you, Brandy, as always.
Yeah, first I must say, a big day tomorrow, an exciting day where the three initiatives are going to go into law that were signed, passed by the legislature, including the Parental Rights Initiative, the ACLU not able to halt it. Is that a surprise, considering they had a King County judge?
No, actually. I've been encouraged lately, Brandy, by a number of decisions coming out of our state's trial courts that deal with, and in some cases with these initiatives, the high-profile case, the one that tried to get Trump removed from the presidential primary ballot, we are making good, strong arguments in court on a number of these issues. And I think that some of the judges, even if they're a little left of center in their personal lives, are doing a pretty good job of treating our strong arguments well, I mean, with an open mind. And we built a little bit of momentum, I think, where our reputation when we get into their courtrooms is that we're not goofy, we're not silly, we're making strong fact and law-based arguments, again, primarily around the initiatives and their implementation. And I think the judges are a fair listen. So I'm not entirely surprised. I'm encouraged, happy about it. But not entirely surprised. In the case of the Parents' Bill of Rights initiative and soon to be law, the ACLU's argument, while heartfelt, I'm sure, was just not very strong on the law. And they haven't stopped yet. You know, the decision this week was really their attempt to get a kind of preliminary injunction or an early ruling in their favor on the Parents' Bill of Rights. That didn't work. They didn't get it. But they're not giving up. They're going to continue to try to fight that good policy, soon to be law. But it's going to be harder and harder for them to do it once the law takes effect.
Yeah, my favorite argument from the ACLU was that the parental rights bill will or initiative will hurt parents. I love that one. It's like, wow, that's interesting. I don't know how you put that together. So, all right. So you've got three that are going to take effect on Thursday. And then, of course, there are still efforts to try to make it more difficult to get voters to pass the other initiatives, which will be on the ballot in November. So you have a court case coming up on Friday. There's a lot at stake in it. Can you explain in the simplest terms the ins and outs of that case?
Sure. Completely different lawsuit than the ACLU one, a different matter altogether. The ACLU may even get involved in this other one, but it's a different lawsuit. A couple of years ago in Olympia, the legislature passed a new bill into law that gives the state attorney general working with the Office of Financial Management, that's a bureaucratic agency under the governor. So the governor and the state attorney general working together can write these brief fiscal impact statements that attach to the initiative, if an initiative qualifies for the ballot, that attach to the initiative on the ballot and on the pamphlet, the voter's information pamphlet comes out before a ballot. And this brief statement is designed, frankly, to be a no argument against whatever the initiative is made by the state attorney general and the governor. Now, the supporters of this idea claim that it's more information, it's more data for voters to make. The truth is it's a blank check that a partisan attorney general can just editorialize. And if they don't like an initiative, they can just say, it cuts all child care, it harms schools, it reduces roads and bridge maintenance. And as we've seen already in the political debates around these initiatives, there's a lot of false fear-mongering that's said about what they will do. And we're very concerned that the misuse of this statement, this fiscal impact statement, right on the initiative as it appears in the ballot, is a risk to good policy and to free and fair elections on initiatives. And the lawsuit is challenging the state attorney general and the governor's office current approach to using this fiscal impact statement as rhetoric instead of real information. And we've caught the current attorney general and governor in kind of a couple of logic binds, similar to the ACLU argument in the other lawsuit. They claimed throughout, for example, that the cap and trade scheme is not a tax. That was an essential part of their defense of cap and trade, that it's not a tax. Well, these fiscal impact statements are supposed to be made on initiatives that affect tax policy and tax revenue. So they can't have it both ways. They can't have said it's not a tax, and then for the purposes of editorializing against it, say it is a tax. So we're going to have some fun with that, because they've caught themselves in a pickle there by being a little too clever and trying to have it both ways.
Yeah, and I mean, we have an email from the governor's office when we would call it a carbon tax, and his staff explicitly telling us, don't call it a tax. It's not a tax. It's a fee. And so I don't know how they can now argue it's a tax. But what about with the other ones? Because capital gains is clearly a tax. And I don't know, do you have an argument on long-term care that would be the same? Or are those two not part of your pushback?
No, no, they're all part of it. We make slightly different legal arguments in each of the three cases. The cap and trade's kind of the easiest. Some of this gets into the weeds a bit. But in the case of the capital gains tax, what we're arguing there is other law already on the books in the state treats the capital gains tax in different ways, particularly with reference to its relationship. This is the state capital gains tax with federal tax law. Now, it gets convoluted here, but basically, our law in the state dealing with our state capital gains tax has a couple of points of conflict with federal tax law. And what we're arguing there is those points in conflict make this statement about the repealing the capital gains tax too complicated for a 15-word, you know, no argument, and that really they should say nothing about it or very little because of all these conflicts. This also touches onto our state Supreme Court's current position on capital gains, which is extremely problematic, again, because of its conflicts with federal tax law. So our argument there is a little different than the cap and trade argument, but it's that the conflicts with federal tax law make the attorney general's a position, and we haven't even gotten to his final position yet, but from what he's already said, not appropriate to the fiscal impact statement, which is what the 15-word description is supposed to be.
Yeah, and on long-term care, I don't know what your argument is, but what strikes me is it's the initiative just makes it optional. So I don't know how they could pretend to even know what the fiscal impact would be, because they don't even know how many Washingtonians would say, I don't want to buy in.
That's correct. And they've so far in their rhetoric around what the initiative might do, they have made some exaggerated statements that are reasonably falsifiable.
Yeah, I mean, you can't know. They cannot know. Right. There is no way to predict unless they ask every single Washingtonian whether they'll opt in or opt out.
That's right. And so our argument, each argument on the three are slightly different, but the common theme through all is these fiscal impact statements need to be very fact-based and narrowly focused on tax revenue effects, which is what the original law that created these things said, and that we don't want to give this attorney general, or really any attorney general, a future one, like a blank check to just editorialize. They have to make whatever they say very narrow and very fact-based. That's the gist of our argument in court this coming Friday.
Yeah, and that's what freaks me out, because, and you alluded to it earlier, I'm all for, I want increased transparency. I want to always more information for me when I'm deciding how to vote is better. So I'm not inherently opposed to the idea of what is the fiscal impact of something I'm going to vote on. What does worry me is the reason this was passed. Clearly, the only people running anti-tax initiatives are going to be conservatives, right? And so it was clearly designed to try to prevent the one way to push back against the party in power. But also, as you said, look at what Senator Marco Elias has been saying about what would happen if we repeal the CCA, that we can't fix bridges and potholes and projects that have already been funded are going to be ground to a halt. So it's like, is that the kind of lies that are going to make their way onto the ballot? And also, if they were going to in turn say, in the contrary, here's what it would save the average Washingtonian if you repeal this policy, then they're getting, like, you know, at least a fair look at the fiscal impacts to the state and the fiscal impacts to themselves. Do you think you're going to prevail on Friday, Jim?
Well, we've got some momentum going. It's always... I always hesitate to predict how things will go in court, but we've got momentum going. I think our arguments are strong. And to your point, we're not arguing to get rid of fiscal impact statements. Some of our colleagues in politics and law are saying we're trying to get rid of the information. No, that's not right. We're trying to argue that the fiscal impact statement needs to be a true, narrowly focused fiscal impact statement and not broad political editorializing. And so we're not arguing to get rid of the statements. We're arguing to use them when they're appropriate, where they're appropriate, and in the right way.
Yeah, that's Jim Walsh talking about the court hearing they have on Friday. And the outcome of that is incredibly consequential for the success of these initiatives, the three that are left that are going to be voted on in November. And again, like I said to Jim, the idea of having more information to inform my vote isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's the concern about who's writing it, who's writing the warning labels, what their intent is, and whether it gives voters a complete picture. So we'll be watching that closely. Now, that is where our interview with Jim Walsh was going to end. However, I did let him know before we had him on that, hey, Jim, you still haven't commented to us on what happened with Sammy Byrd and the accusations of stolen valor, which are very, very serious. When we had initially reached out, he basically said, look, I want to give it a couple days at least for Sammy Byrd to respond himself. But Jim agreed to come on and talk about the initiatives and that court hearing, even knowing that we were going to ask about Sammy Byrd on the back end. I intended it to be a pretty brief conversation. It was not a very brief conversation, but I'm going to play it for you coming up next. First, if you're in the market to sell your home at any point in 2024, reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a long time. He knows the market like the back of his hand, and he has been a real estate agent during difficult times in the market where interest rates weren't good. There were other factors that were slowing how many people were out actually looking for homes. But he knows how to navigate these situations. Bryce and Carla, who are fans of Undivided, reached out to Wes when they decided to sell their home in Bellevue and move to Florida.
He was extraordinarily detailed, and he knew our neighborhood and our properties in the neighborhood very well. He gave us a really great comp plan, showed us what other properties were selling for, and most importantly, he helped us to understand the dangers of overpricing. And we thought what we knew we could get for the property, but we didn't, you know, at the same time, he breathed an air of reality into us and said, look, guys, you want to get that out of the property, you're going to need to start at a certain point, and you're going to let the market come to you. And that's exactly what happened. He was exactly right about that. So his knowledge of the market and his professionalism and his attention to detail is all that made the difference to us.
Yeah, and even in January, with the interest rates the way they were able to sell their home in 7 days over list price. So that is what Wes Jones and his team bring to the table. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, so obviously there was the report out from Jason Rantz on accusations that Sammy Byrd defrauded the U.S. military and committed what two Green Berets, speaking on the condition of anonymity, told Jason Rantz amounted to stolen valor, inflating things he had done in the field of battle during Operation Iraqi Freedom. I would think for most voters, credible concerns of stolen valor are a big issue for political candidates, particularly a political candidate who wants to be the governor of the state of Washington and who has some other things in his history that he has not been completely honest and forthright about. So when that report first came out, we reached out to Jim Walsh, the chair of the Washington State Republican Party, party to ask him if he had a comment on it. He did not. He said he wanted to give their endorsed candidate for governor a couple days to put out his own statements and his own comments and refute the allegations if he could. So I told Jim Walsh before he came on to talk about the initiatives today, hey, I'm going to ask you about Semi Bird. Jim Walsh is a good sport. So he said, that's fine. I'll come on anyway. I never surprise anyone with things like this. We ended up having a much longer conversation about it than I intended. I cannot let you go without asking about something else. The Semi Bird stolen valor accusations. We reached out to you. You told producer Nicole, you know, we'll comment on that, by give him enough time to sort of absorb it. Jim, do you believe that the accusations are credible against him?
Well, there are a bunch of accusations. Some of them are documented, some of them are not. I'm concerned by some of these allegations against Bird that are anonymously sourced. I'm always nervous about that.
Like the two Green Berets who spoke to Jason Rantz on the condition of anonymity.
In some ways, those are the most damning accusations, and they're anonymously sourced. So the Washington State Republican Party's position is still, we're going to give this time. We're going to let Bird, I mean, Bird is really the only one who can answer these issues. And we can pop off, you can, all kinds of people talk about it, but really Bird is the one who needs to address these matters. And we are still giving him time and space to do what we hope is an effective job of explaining what happened, explaining his position, and either refuting or confirming these allegations. I mean, Bird is the right person to be leading the conversation about this. And I and others really shouldn't get in his way. It's his job to explain this.
Jim, that's ridiculous. Come on. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know that. He's done multiple podcasts, multiple live streams. He went on John Carlson, spent the whole time just in a rage about the fact that people would dare report on this. I mean, he wrote a letter. You've seen the letter, right? It has his name signed on it.
Yes, the statement that he attached to a letter of reprimand from a senior officer.
He says that his own conduct was nothing short of fraud against the U.S. Army. What kind of explanation do you have to wait for to look at his own writing on that, where
he says...
Well,
Bird has claimed that there is a larger context and that there were other things going on and that he has documents or other kind of proof that there was a larger context of that letter. And I want to give him the ability to show that there was a larger context.
Yeah.
Obviously, look, we have to treat these matters really seriously, Brandy. They are incredibly heavy accusations. You know, not only is stolen valor a specific thing in the law, which carries a heavy penalty, in political circles, it can be career ending. So to jump to any kind of hasty conclusion on this, I think, is a mistake. We have to let this situation play out. I certainly would like to see more than just the testimonies made by anonymous sources. I'm very troubled by that.
Did the same Republican Party give Clyde Shavers the same consideration and time and distance to explain his side of things when he was accused of stolen valor?
Well, Shavers has had 2 years
His side of things. Jim, during the election, when Clyde Shavers, it came out that he had lied about his military service weeks before the election, it surfaced. You're telling me that the Republican Party took a step back and said, we're going to give him time to explain what happened?
I mean, he's had years to explain it. I mean,
it's
not a question of us giving anyone time. I mean, we have to let these allegations play out in a rational way. So I'm not going to, you know, jump to hasty conclusions. You know, there's a lot of talk of, would the party rescind its endorsement of Bird? There's no mechanism to rescind an endorsement. And you know, it's kind of an academic conversation. And I don't think that rescinding endorsements, even if there were a mechanism to do it, are a good idea. I mean, you know, it only exaggerates a controversy. It doesn't calm it. So, you know, for those concerned that, you know, will the endorsement be rescinded? I don't see a mechanism to rescind an endorsement. But we are concerned about this. We're concerned about the effects that these allegations may have not only on Byrd, but on other Republican candidates for office. You know, it's heavy stuff, and I don't want to be trivial about it. Let's give Byrd plenty of space and time to explain what happened in a way that will be compelling or won't be compelling. It's up to Byrd to clean up this matter, and the rest of us are just spectators.
Man, Jim, I just don't even know what to say to that. You know how vitriolic he's being and his people are being. I mean, do you think Jason Rantz is not trustworthy, that his reporting isn't sound?
No. I think Rantz has always been a sound reporter and opinion maker. You know, again, these are heavy allegations, potentially career ending to a public figure, to an elected politician. And it's not surprising that Byrd's loyal supporters are very upset by it. But let's not let upset and emotion dictate response.
Yeah, I don't care what the party does, by the way. I don't care what the party does. I don't care if you rescind his endorsement or whatever it is. That's really none of my business. My big concern is the moral hypocrisy of it. My big concern is looking at Clyde Shavers and others who might or have, you know, committed acts of stolen valor or inflated their military service, and who, you know, Republicans went after tooth and nail, rightfully so. And now it's like, well, it's our guy, so we're going to give him some space and some distance. And I just think it's...
Well, the last I saw, Clyde Shavers is in elective office.
Yeah, he shouldn't be. And so, I want to be able to, in November, as he's running for re-election and Republicans have a really good candidate, they're running against him, I want to be able to beat the drum on the issues of stolen valor with Clyde Shavers without sounding like a complete and utter hypocrite. And I don't think Republicans can do that. I don't think that they can use his stolen valor against him now in November.
Okay, well, we'll just use his bad votes as a legislator.
You can do that too. All right, Jim, I'm not going to dwell on it because I understand. There's the position that you're in. And, you know, I am shocked at the extent to which the Republican Party is sitting back and letting Semi Byrd and his supporters go scorched earth on anyone who questions what he did, questions what he wrote in black and white, and acts like we're the bad guys for pointing it out. That's what bothers me. And I don't really know how to, I don't know how to square that with a party that wants to win. That's where I'm at. So,
well, we don't win by being emotional. I believe we win by being reasonable and rational and methodical. I mean, there's too much emotionalism in politics and policy already. I mean, this is what, get back to the initiatives, this is what the initiatives clean up. They clean up bad law and bad policy made not with reason, but with emotional manipulation. And we see it every day.
Who's emotionally manipulating on this?
Who?
Why is it emotionally manipulating to point out that he admitted in 2009 to defrauding the U.S. Army and he never told you about it? He never told his party about it, as he was supposed to, as part of the process to getting the party's endorsement. How is it emotionally manipulating to point that out?
It's emotionally manipulating to say that what the man did was stolen valor. That has not been proved in a rational, methodical way.
So it's,
I mean,
semantics.
Stolen valor is a heavy, heavy charge, and it's a heavy crime.
So it makes a difference if I say stolen valor versus, well, I'll just use his words then. He defrauded the U.S. Army. I can say that, right? Because
he said that. That's very damaging too, yes, but it's not as damaging as stolen valor, which, you know, is one of the worst offenses that a person can make with regard to military service or military history. And it is devastating. And I don't want to, you know, lower that boom on a man who I'm not sure has done that. Let's let this situation play out a little longer, not forever, but let's let it work its way out along. Let's let the process play out and let's find out if what he did really reaches that level. So far, I don't think we're there yet. Okay. But let's see how it develops.
I won't use the phrase stolen valor anymore. I'll say Semibird defrauded the U.S. Army. That's the change that I'll make. If it's a semantics issue and it's the stolen valor that's the problem, because that's what gets to me about it. It's like, this man did remarkable things for our country. You know, he went back to serve our country at a time when it was very, very dangerous and deadly to be a soldier after 9/11. I give him a lot of credit for that. So it almost bothers me more that he would feel the need to inflate, you know, his service and the trainings and all these things and wear badges that he hadn't earned. Because it's like, you did enough, man. You did enough for our country. You don't have to defraud the U.S. Army to try to get something more out of your career. So, Jim, I don't...
And you know who's articulated that very well? Yvonne Gallardo is running for the state legislature in the 10th Congressional District against Clyde Shaver.
Yeah, and you just pulled it out from underneath her, Jim. God, Jim,
no,
why are you making me do this?
I haven't pulled anything out from underneath her, Brandy.
The party
has. She
has
very articulately said, why do you need to embellish? You know, she served. She was not a hero in a movie, but she served honorably. And she very articulately, I didn't want to say it for her, Brandy. Have her come on and say it. She says, "Why? You know, I'm proud of my service. I don't feel any need to embellish what I did. What I did was good and solid."
Yeah.
Let Yvonne Gallardo say that. I mean, she will make a great argument without having to emotionally manipulate people and be inflammatory. I think you will see that in her race against Clyde Shavers, she will be methodical and reasonable and rational about what constitutes a good elected official, a good elected legislator.
Yeah.
And, you know, is your history part of it? Sure it is, but also your present is part of it. And leaving aside Clyde Shaver's history, he's taken a number of bad votes in the legislature. And ultimately, that's what we should be talking about when we're talking about electing a legislator. So let's watch how all of this plays out, Brandy. But I encourage you to talk to Yvonne and ask her about these issues. She's very articulate and reasonable and methodical in talking about them.
Yeah, I've met her several times, and we look forward to having her on the show. What I'm saying, though, is she can make those arguments soundly, rationally, reasonably, but the Republican Party in punting on the semi-bird issue, on at least, at the very least, his own admissions, it goes yoink to the rug right underneath Yvonne and her ability to make a morally sound argument, because at every turn she's going to be met with, you're saying that about Clyde Shavers, what about semi-bird? So it just destroys one of the fundamental, I think, downfalls for Clyde Shavers, and just morally speaking. That's what I can't get around, is like, we can disagree on whether two Green Berets would have just for no reason in the world told Jason Rance these stories. We can, you know, question Jason Rance's reporting on other things, but what I will not question is a document that Semibird has not denied the authenticity of, where he admits to defrauding the U.S. Army, a document that, did he tell you existed, Jim, when you were going through the process for the endorsement? Should he have told you about that document?
Yes.
He did not.
It would have been better if he had, you know.
Yeah. He didn't tell you about the bank fraud either. So there's and the other things he wouldn't have told you about had they not come out before the endorsement process was concluded. He's hid things from you. He's lied about things. And it's just like, that's fine. It's not fine.
No one is saying that these things are fine. What we are saying is, let's let this story develop as it should, so that when we act, if we act, when we respond, and it's not just the party, it's all of us as individual voters.
Yeah.
When we react, we are reacting, we are responding in a rational and logical way. I think that's entirely reasonable.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any hypocrisy or inconsistency here with regard to Clyde Shavers. He's been in office for years. He's had a long time to clarify questions about his service.
Yeah. Yeah. If Bird supporters and Semibird were acting in a rational, reasonable matter as well, I might be more inclined to. But that's not what's happening. You just have to listen to Semibird on John Carlson to realize that this is all about being a victim and not about something that he wrote himself. But Jim, I'm sorry. I told you when I was going to have you on, we're not going to dwell on it. But the man, I thought I didn't expect that to Make me so upset.
Back to the initiative.
Back to the initiative.
Three of them
hey,
take effect in law on Thursday.
I love it.
And we're defending the other three in court in Thurston County on Friday. So Thursday and Friday are going to be very initiative focused.
Love it.
And good. Good reforms, good tax policy, and all the stuff we're fighting for.
I love it, Jim. And I'm in that fight with you. The semi-bird thing doesn't change that. That's what I want you to know is like those initiatives, I'll give them hell alongside you as well and push for change in November. But that doesn't mean we're not going to have our occasional disagreements. But you're a good sport, and I appreciate
you
coming
on. We always do, Brandy.
We
That's do. Why I like coming on your show.
All right, Jim. Good luck on Friday. We will be waiting with bated breath to see what happens.
Thanks.
So there's that. I have nothing else to add. All right. I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, especially if your family's budget is really tight. You're looking to ways to save money, but you're like, gosh, we've cut out all the extras. Well, have you taken a second look at your insurance? You know, insurance rates have been wild lately. So First Mark Insurance, a wonderful insurance broker here locally, been doing this for a long time. I took the First Mark Challenge. Mike and I are now insured through First Mark. Nicole is undivided as a business is, and there's a reason for that. They will make sure that you are not paying more than you need to for the insurance that you need. Ben Bailey and his wife, Leslie, took the First Mark Challenge, saved them about $1,500 a year.
You know, more than anything, it was really kind of drilling down and looking at the current coverages that we have today. And if those were adequate for, you know, say, if we had a major incident here at the house, you know, were our cars covered adequately, or were they actually, in our case, over covered, right? We have one car that's fairly new, and another one that's you know, a few years old, and the one that was a few years old actually has had too much coverage on it. So that helped as well.
Yeah, so don't pay more for the insurance you need, and for sure you don't want to be paying for insurance you don't even need like Ben was. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take some time to do the First Mark Challenge. It's totally free, and in fact, you never pay First Mark a dime for their services. firstmarkinsurance.com, they work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, it's the job that almost no one wanted, and for that reason, the job is going to the only person who actually wants to take it. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Man, imagine wanting to work for a completely discombobulated, failing, bloated government entity that is absolutely falling short of its core mission, which is to end homelessness in King County. The King County Regional Homelessness Authority has been a debacle from the start. Their first CEO ended up resigning. You know, it was so poorly managed. I think the writing was on the wall. They weren't even getting payments out to contractors. And we know that since the inception of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, which had promised us as part of Partnership for Zero, that we would have virtually no homeless in downtown Seattle by now. That's interesting, because I was just down there the other day, and I can tell you there are absolutely homeless people there. Since the inception of the King County Regional Homeless Authority, homelessness has increased 23%. So yeah, this is what happens when you just dump millions of dollars into the homeless industrial complex to pay a bunch of people fat six-figure salaries, and they have no incentive to actually solve the underlying issue. But King County presses forward with it, and they need, of course, a new CEO, because the old one, Mark Downs, said, see ya. So here's the thing. They decided to pick the only person who actually wanted the job. This is the headline from the Puget Sound Business Journal. She took the job few others wanted. King County Homelessness Authority CEO. Yeah, no others wanted. No others wanted. King County Regional Homeless Authority said in a statement about their decision to hire Dr. Kinnison. We are confident that Dr. Kinnison is the most qualified and capable candidate to lead the King County Regional Homelessness Authority and bring stability, continuity, and vision to the organization. That's interesting. You're confident that she's the most qualified and capable, or are you confident that she was the only person left who wanted the job? Because they did this whole nationwide search, they had three finalists, and the other two dropped out. The other two said, no thanks, this is clearly a disaster. So they were only left with one person, and now they're trying to sell it to us as, well, that's the most qualified and capable person. No, it was more process of elimination. This from our friends at the Center Square. King County Homeless Agency close to hiring lone candidate for CEO role. There's been a conditional offer, but basically it's going to turn into employment. The Homeless Authority's implementation board voted 7-2 in favor of recommending Kelly Kinnison to be the agency's first permanent CEO since Mark Doan stepped down from the role in May of 2023. Kinnison is based out of Washington, D.C., where she is currently the director of family and community policy at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. In this role, Kinnison oversees the development of legislative proposals and policy on employment and economic mobility, refugee resettlement, housing, and homelessness. Since Doan's left, the Regional Homelessness Authority has had two interim CEOs, including Daryl Powell, who recently withdrew his candidacy from the permanent CEO search because he does not believe the agency is in a position to make strides in helping homeless people in King County, as previously reported by the Center Square. Powell said, quote, significant governance changes and personnel changes would be needed to achieve that agency's potential. So here you have a guy who was in the temporary role and decided that although he made the final three for consideration to be CEO, he didn't want the job because he knew that he could do his best and it would still be a failure because the agency is inherently structured to be a failure. I do want to note, and I had agreed with this when I saw it, Kathy Moore, who's one of the newest council members, one of the more moderates who came in with a little bit of sanity, she had called a couple weeks ago for them to suspend the process of hiring a new CEO. Because she said, are we really choosing a new CEO when we're only left with one choice? She had put out a press release. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But she said, after the two dropped out, she said, it is clear that the search committee must take time to reassess. She was calling for it to be halted. She said, I appreciate the time and candor of each of the candidates. However, when two out of the three finalists you're interviewing withdraw their candidacy in close succession, it's clear there's a larger problem. Given the myriad of challenges facing the agency, it's imperative that we make the best hiring decision. We cannot afford to have our choice made by default. To ensure we're best positioned to recruit and hire the right match for this critical leadership position, we must first get our house in order. It's the only way we can ensure the authority has a chance to succeed. Well, that's a little bit of common sense for you. I mean, you really are that desperate as opposed to just continuing on with some interim. First of all, it needs to be disbanded. That's my position on it. And I actually think that's a growingly popular position because across the ideological spectrum, there's been a realization that the authority has been a failure. It was promised really as the end all be all. Like, this is what is going to get us out of this homeless crisis. So now a couple years later, and you see a worse homelessness crisis than ever before being made worse by the influx of asylum seekers who have no place to go, so they're camping in parks. This clearly is not working. It is not going to work unless you want to overhaul it in its entirety. And so any executive level person who isn't lying on their resume ought to realize that that might not be the best career decision for them unless they're just eternally desperate for a job. So employment by process of elimination, isn't that nice? Shall we do a double dose of unbelievable today? I think we shall. All right, if you have a problem with biological boys crushing girls in sports, then you're just a bad person. You're just a terrible person, and you really ought to look in the mirror and just really reconsider why you're so mean to kids. That's kind of the position of the Seattle Times. We've been talking about this issue quite a bit on Sundays with Subscribers a couple weeks ago. We had on a dad named Brandon Wilson, whose daughter was crushed by 7 seconds in the mile run by a biological boy at the Junior Olympics track meet in Kashmir. And he had a very thoughtful interview where he talked about, look, it's not about, you know, targeting these trans kids. It's just about fairness and not putting girls, his daughter was a phenomenal athlete, not putting her in a position to train and work hard and then realize there's nothing more she could have done to beat a biological boy. So there was also the case of Veronica Garcia. So Veronica Garcia is a biological boy competing as a girl in Washington track and field against other girls. Veronica Garcia recently won the state championship in the girls' 400 meter race. Here's the video.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've ever watched a track meet or participated in track, the 400 meter run is once around. To get smoked by that much shows the difference between a biological boy and a biological girl. Veronica won by a significant amount. But according to the Seattle Times, like, we all hurt Veronica's feelings, which I said, what did I say on this show when we were discussing this? This isn't about the kids. And the second we make it about the kids and transgender kids is the second you're engaged in a losing side of the debate. No, this is about what adults need to do. And I even said I feel bad for athletes like Veronica. Veronica's playing by the rules. That the rules allow Veronica to compete against biological girls. And at the end of the day, this is a kid. And I'm not going to sit here and attack and vilify a kid. As misguided as I think it is that kid is participating, a biological boy against biological girls. This is about bad decisions adults have made in the interest of ideology. So Seattle Times talked to Veronica Garcia. The headline, Washington's first transgender high school track champion addresses reaction. Garcia cheered and clapped for her competitors as they received their medals. When the announcer called her to the podium, the crowd fell silent and the other high school runners at the podium did not acknowledge her as they stood with hands clasped behind their backs. As she accepted her gold medal, a voice in the crowd could be heard yelling, "She's not a girl." Garcia expected the chilly reaction from the crowd, though she was somewhat hurt. Her peers did not offer congratulations. Quote, "I guess maybe I expected sportsmanship because I was cheering the rest of them on when they were called. So I guess I expected to get that reciprocated, but I didn't get that." First of all, before I get to the next part of the article, what do you expect? You have an unfair advantage. I look at it as no different than an athlete at the highest levels pumping themselves full of steroids and competing. There's a reason why performance enhancers at all levels of athletics are not allowed. And you have a natural performance enhancer against those girls. So you expect them to be just okay with that and then to smile and clap and cheer for you as if they're not hurt and as if nothing was wrong. The article goes on to talk from the perspective of a doctor on this issue. The negative attention and controversy could have a severely negative impact on Garcia, said Dr. Kellen Byron, an executive director of Whitman Walker, a national organization that provides healthcare to LGBTQ members of the community. Quote, "It's horrendous. There's already a mental health crisis among young people in this country, trans or not, and to be attacked for wanting the same thing that every other teenager wants, which is to fit in, to belong, to participate, to be on the team, to play, that's incredibly damaging, and it's incredibly cruel. It is also particularly dangerous," he said, "for transgender youth who are at higher risk of suicide and self-harm compared to their peers." No. I mean, where did they have to go to find... Of course, it's not okay to bully kids. But when you're saying that Veronica just wants to fit in, just wants to belong, just wants to participate, to play, then play on the boys' team. You can still do that. You can play on the boys' team with other boys who are a better biological match for what you were born with. And so it's not bullying to be upset that you've worked hard for something as a young athlete and you are the best of the best among the girls. You might be even looking to get some sort of scholarship for college for athletics, but you'll never be able to beat a biological boy. So we have to, and this is where they pull out like the Trump card, right? Where we can't have these conversations because it'll hurt this student's feelings. Like, no, that's not. And the other Trump card. What was the Trump card they used when we were talking about 5599? Oh, if you don't agree to let the state hide your kids from you, you just want transgender kids to kill themselves. It was like that was their, you want transgender kids to kill themselves, huh? It's like, no, that's not what we're saying here. So they do these things and they make it emotional and about the impact you're having on them so that we can't have these logical, reasonable conversations. And I just reject that. I'm not going to say anything bad about Veronica Garcia. Now Veronica's putting herself out there in the Seattle Times story, which is interesting because I don't know if they got, I'm hoping they got Veronica's parents' permission to do that. But, you know, so now Veronica's sharing their side of things. And that's fine. I'm still not going to go after a kid, but I am going to go after the adults that refuse to have legitimate conversations about this and refuse to see what they're doing to girls. It is truly unbelievable. All right, 40 pounds down on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, and I have kept most of that weight off for about a year and a half, which is awesome. And really, Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, how I describe it, is it's a lifestyle change. So it's not like a lifelong diet that you have to be strict for every day of your life. It's 60 days of really hard work and commitment that kind of recalibrates how you think about what you're eating, how much of it you're eating. And then after that, you make some lifestyle changes that help you maintain your weight loss for life. So I have encouraged you guys to take a few minutes and schedule time to do a consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. It is completely free to do that. And look, you know, not every diet is right for every person. So it's important before you embark on any sort of diet to talk it through and share your concerns or any questions that you have. And so Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team can do all of that. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation today. All right, let's dip to national news. For the love of God, Biden has lost his damn mind. Lost his damn mind. How dumb do they think you are? How dumb do they think voters are? I'm used to, in an important election year, all of a sudden people acting like a completely different person. I mean, look at Attorney General Bob Ferguson. All of a sudden, he's acting like the public safety candidate, which is just laughable. But there's always this part of me that worries, oh my God, are some voters going to believe it? After years and years of contributing to the decline in public safety, are some people going to believe when he all of a sudden turns around and sells that he's the public safety candidate? So that freaks me out. And now, at the national stage, Biden is all of a sudden trying to convince voters that he is the candidate that cares about border security. So he unveiled some plans to secure the border. Here's part of what he said.
Come here today to do what the Republicans in Congress refuse to do. Take the necessary steps to secure our border. We must face the simple truth. To protect America as a land that welcomes immigrants, we must first secure the border and secure it now. The simple truth is, there is a worldwide migrant crisis. And if the United States doesn't secure our border, there's no limit to the number of people may try to come here, because there's no better place on the planet than the United States of America.
What? Is this a parallel universe? Am I in a parallel universe? I have to be. Did he just actually have the audacity to say he's going to secure the border because Republicans in Congress refuse to? Did he actually have the audacity to suggest, as if we didn't already know, that if we don't secure the border, there's no limit to the amount of people who will come here? Yeah, we've been seeing that nonstop flow for several years now. He knows that. They know that. And in fact, he called it a crisis. Remember? He refused to acknowledge it was a crisis. He would not use the word crisis, and Karine Jean-Pierre wouldn't use the word crisis. That was like the dictate. Now it's a crisis, and it's a crisis of the Republican Party's making? Holy moly. Whew, this is gaslighting to the extreme. Here's the tweet he sent out with his specific actions to secure the border. So on the executive action, he says, it bars migrants who cross the southern border unlawfully from receiving asylum. And how many times have Republicans said, hey, we do have an asylum process, but don't give it to them if they're swimming across the Rio Grande and scaling a fence. And he also highlighted some more recent actions taken by the administration, strengthening the asylum screening process, new docket to address cases and make decisions within 6 months versus 6 years, revoking visas of CEOs and government officials who profit from the exploitation of vulnerable migrants, expanding efforts to dismantle human smuggling, enhancing immigration enforcement, seizing fentanyl at our border. So how much of this is smoke and mirrors, right? So there's a couple people who cover the border who I trust implicitly with their coverage. One of them is obviously our friend Allie Bradley, who does remarkable border coverage. And then Bill Malusian with Fox, who also does a ton of border coverage. And Bill Malusian put out a tweet talking about why this can't be described. Some were saying Biden's finally shutting down the southern border. And Bill's like, no, he's not. So I want to read the context that Bill Malusian has on what the Biden administration said, because I think it's much more informed than the context that I would bring to you on the situation. So Bill said, in no way can Biden's executive order be described as shutting down the border. It bans asylum to some illegal crossers with exceptions. It does not stop or slow the up to 1,500 migrants per day released into the U.S. via the Customs and Border Protection One app at ports of entry, and does not stop or slow the up to 30,000 migrants per month flying directly into the U.S. and being released into the country via Biden's controversial mass parole program for Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans. Unaccompanied children and minors are exempt from the order, which will lead to concerns about child trafficking, and migrants can still claim fear in an attempt to avoid deportation. Also, asylum has already been banned for most migrants who cross illegally since the end of Title 42 last year, and that hasn't stopped them from coming. Highest numbers in recorded history, end of 2023. He said the order may speed up removals to countries we can deport easily to, like Mexico and the North Triangle countries, but there has been no explanation as to how the administration will be able to begin mass removals of migrants coming from another hemisphere with governments that don't cooperate with the U.S. Again, if you take them in, if they get across, and in some of those countries where the other country doesn't want them back, and now they're in the custody of Customs and Border Patrol, what are you going to do? You can't put them on a plane. That country's going to turn them right about, and then they're just going to live in the air? It's like, you take them, you take them, you take them. So there are a lot of issues with that. And this is part of the reason why you can't let crises get this bad. We do this on so many things. Crime. Now, all of a sudden, some Democrats are like, oh, crime's kind of bad. Yeah, we've been telling you that for like 8 years that it was getting there and you denied it. Oh, homelessness is kind of getting bad. Yeah, up 23% year over year. We've kind of been saying this, right? Oh, drug crisis is really bad. Yeah, we told you you ought not decriminalize drugs. And they wait till it's horrible and there's death and destruction and violence and all these things. They're like, let's do something about it. And let's decide to do something about it just a few months before a big important election where we're on the ballot. Ridiculous. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, do you believe this will be enough to convince swing voters that Biden is committed to tackling illegal immigration? Because again, that's my fear, right? Is me, Nicole, all of you guys, we see through this stuff. We see it for what it is because we soak in news and politics all day long. But remember, the average voter is not like that. They're not as in tune. They watch the news in the morning or at night for weather and traffic, and they might catch a little bit here and there, and a lot depends on what the news entity they're watching is. So will they buy into this? Cynthia Coulson says yes, because most people only listen to what they want to hear and not what is actually said or the meaning of what is said. Actions speak louder than words. Biden is not taking action. He is pretending he cares about the border crisis 3.5 years too late. May says too little too late. It's a ploy to get votes. Oh, 100% it's a ploy. The question is how many swing voters will buy into the ploy. Joel Locke says how it goes with Biden. He says things he doesn't mean. And I heard the other day he is secretly giving some illegals amnesty. Well, there was, yeah, the flights into the country were mass amnesty for like 350,000 people who were here with pending asylum cases. And they decide just to say, no, we don't have to go through the cases. And you're just in the country now. Stacey, I said yes, because there's so many people in my area that are just dumb and believe everything they read on Facebook. Man, there are a troubling number of people on both sides who believe absolutely everything they read on Facebook. David Stilley on X says, unfortunately, I feel folks will think it's enough because folks will listen to the mainstream media as they speak to it in a positive manner. I agree. It all comes down to who the messenger is. Where are you getting your news? How much news are you consuming? I always encourage people when they ask what I watch and listen to, be varying in your sources. See what NPR is saying. See what CNN is saying. See what Fox is saying. See what the National Review is saying, or something, whatever it is. And the truth often is somewhere in the middle of all that. And it's up to Americans, unfortunately, to sort that out for themselves. All right, coming up next, we'll get to questions and comments and then a doozy of a closing sanity check. We're just humming right along today, aren't we? Kind of. Nicole, you were very worried.
Yeah,
I was going to go. I've been going late every day. I've been going late every day.
Yeah.
Thank you for trying to be nice to me. I've been going late. Nicole's like, you can't go late today because we have interviews. So I'm going to go a little late. That's fine. No big deal. All right. You guys know we've been talking about this on the show, obviously, and you probably feel it yourself when you go out to eat or when you go buy groceries. Inflation is through the roof. And so one of the things that is being talked about when it comes to the strength of the economy right now and what's happening with inflation is fast food restaurants. So you go to a fast food restaurant where you're going probably because either you need food fast or you need it cheap or both. And you'd be shocked to see some of the prices, like $9 in some places for a Big Mac. And that's because the ingredients to make it are going up. And so they operate on the margins and they have to make money. So they've got to raise their prices to keep up with inflation. Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, who joins us on the show every week, said that is just the nature of doing business. And unfortunately, they have no choice but to raise prices to a point where some consumers won't be able to afford it.
In order for these guys to maintain profit margins, they've got to push the incremental price of the products they're selling to a level that is beyond the reach of the average consumer. And, free market capitalism isn't a perfect system, but the reason we've stuck with it is because it's better than everything else we've tried. And it seems like we have to relearn that lesson every 10 or 20 years or so in this country.
Yeah, we're learning that lesson right now. I like that he says free markets aren't perfect, but they're better than everything else. And I do have to agree with that. So Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, not only do they specialize in managing risk on your retirement portfolio, which is really critical with everything going on locally, nationally, and globally, but also they call inflation the silent portfolio killer. And they can help you take a look at your retirement portfolio to make sure that it is keeping up with inflation and that you're going to be able to retire in the way you want to, despite what inflation has done to prices. So I recommend having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. You can sign up totally free, no obligation, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com, and listen to his radio show while you're there. You could learn a lot about the economy. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Trek 24244, go to knowyourriskradio.com. All right, questions and comments. This first one, Nicole, that was from an email you got, right?
Yes.
Nicole thought it was interesting, and I do too, and I'm not sure I have good advice. Cole emailed us seeking advice. He said, I'm thinking of voting for Mullett in the primary and Reichert in the general as a tactic to keep Ferguson from advancing to the general election. Is this a flawed strategy seeking advice? I would say yes, only because these things don't work unless a lot of people are coordinated and participating in that strategy. So I always just say, vote for who you want to win. Vote for who you want to win. Don't risk it. And there's four people in the race. There is a potential that Republicans divide votes. And so by doing that, you could send through someone who you didn't intend to send through. So yeah, unless you've got millions of people, or in this case, in the state, hundreds of thousands of people who are going to do the same thing and have the same plan, it really isn't going to make much of a difference. So I would just say, Cole, my advice is vote for who you want to actually win. All right, Matt M. on our Jim Walsh interview. Geez, talk about tap dance. Done with Bird, got a text from his campaign. I responded with, stop. Does that work? Because I would like to do that with a few.
Oh, I think you can.
Does it?
Well, for some of them.
I get texts from this place I've bought clothing from a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
Endless.
I have a lot of those.
Oh, my God, endless. And I like them, but I'm me want to shop there less. I can opt out of it.
Yeah,
Nicole, you know I'm an old lady. I just got a new phone with a case on it this time. I was rolling with like an iPhone. What did I have? An 8?
12? 12. I think it was a 12.
12. I was rolling with
an old
iPhone.
5 years.
With a bad camera. And now I have a new one.
And it has a case. I'm so impressed because this girl never has a case.
I like to live dangerously.
Nothing's protected.
I like to live dangerously. Todd Welch, I don't like the term stolen valor. I'm not sure this classifies under that terminology. It goes more to honesty. To me, the stolen valor thing is the accusations from the Green Berets that say he took responsibility in order to get some of these big lofty awards for actions taken on the field of battle. That to me is stolen valor. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any reason to believe that two Green Berets all these years later have such a grudge against Semmy Byrd that they would come out for no reason and tell the same tale. I wouldn't buy that if it was about a Democrat. Why would I buy it if it's about a Republican? So I think to me there's this preponderance of the evidence issue, and it again undercuts any other argument you want to make against someone who's committed stolen valor. But thank you for your opinion. Sally, yes, Semmy has got Jim backed into a corner. It shows the Republican Party in Washington is terrible at vetting candidates. They missed a lot. They missed a lot, and that's not a good place to
Although
be.
I will say, I mean, somebody else has to run. I mean, this is all we don't have a lot of candidates running.
Right.
It's not like we're choosing him out of six others. I mean, it's between him and Dave, but I mean, there's not a lot of people willing to put themselves in this light anymore because it is crazy.
Well, and this is what it is. Mm-hmm. Like I don't have to get into this again, but the complaints about like, how dare you talk about things I did in my past? You're running for governor, dude. Like, this is part and parcel for what you're trying to do. Let's see here. Amtrak, Surfliner, I wasn't going to vote. Then minutes ago, I ordered my Reichard bumper sticker. Good for you. My Cup of Tea says, yes, I am logically concluding I probably cannot vote for Byrd anymore. Jim or Steve says, so Jim is now concerned about semantics. How about semi publicly accusing people, pointing out his checkered past and subsequently subsequent dishonesty of publicly lynching him? Stolen valor is an emotionally charged serious accusation, but throwing around terms like lynching aren't? Pathetic. All right. Da, 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 da. Oh, Adam says, please quit putting semi Byrd down. How is it? That's just ridiculous. Look. First of all, he went on a full unhinged rant after these came out, as opposed to saying, you know what? Yes, I wrote that letter. Here's why. Here's what happened. I take responsibility for that. I should have disclosed this to the state party. Yes, a lot of things have come out about me. I regret them, whatever it is, but I'm a changed man now. Like, do that. Do that. And he can't, because it's that victim mentality when you feel backed into a corner. So I'm not putting him down. Am I putting Bob Ferguson down when I point out that he asked the Secretary of State to break the law in writing? Is that putting Bob Ferguson down, or is that pointing out something that someone has done who's running for public, who's asking for votes from people? You're asking for us to support you. So we have, you're asking to work for us, right? So I'm not putting you down by pointing out something that you admitted to doing. Don A, he should have been more honest, but I don't know anyone in politics who is clean. Reichard has his issues as well. Documented being a Democrat and hiding it all. He's not a Democrat in hiding. That's ridiculous. But I do think he's very independent minded. And has he taken votes that Republicans would disagree with? 100%. But a Democrat in hiding? Like, give me a break on that. Matthew Cook, $5 super chat. My thoughts on Undivided. Whether you like it or hate it, learn to love it because it's the best thing going today. Woo! Is that a Ric Flair quote?
I believe that's why he wrote Ric Flair.
Thanks, Nicole. Okay. All right. Smart A. On homelessness, Nightwolf says, yep, they never look into the underlying reason for the explosion in homelessness. Democratic policy. I agree.
And that's why they are not willing to do anything. So her comment about we need to do something, well, they can't because those are policies.
Yeah, no, we can't do that. We're doing what the Democrats want us to do. And it's failing, but we got to.
They want.
But. The ideology and, you know, being beholden to Democrats is more important than saving lives and getting people off the street. And then they call themselves progressive. Give me a break. On the trans runner, Lane Weaver, what is the lasting effect to those women, like titles and scholarships for future education and lost opportunities? I agree. Speaking of the lasting impact it could have on the trans runner, what about the girls? Deanne Wade, we don't want young teenage girls killing themselves because they have no hope of beating a biological boy.
That Seattle Times piece, I mean, we pulled out a couple quotes from it, but it is long and it is shame on you for questioning this runner.
No, fine.
And, you know, this is how sweet she is and all of this. And I just think it totally leaves out the side of the runners that are getting beat by this boy, biological boy, and have no chance at, you know, reaching some of their dreams, potentials. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they're being blocked.
Yeah.
And I just think that I don't like that. Let's bring out this poor sympathetic child that says, yep, oh, these girls were mean to me.
Right.
No, they were disappointed. And when you lose, you're disappointed.
And when you feel like you lost unfairly.
It's easy to clap for everyone else.
Right. Oh, I clapped for them. Well, good for you, you know. We'll do one more. On the border, B. Larson says, if you've ever been to El Paso and walked across the bridge over the Rio Grande into Juarez, you will see up and down the river people crossing in broad daylight in both directions. Yeah, this is a border crisis. Has been for some time. You know, I was thinking since I had to start the show with a correction, although I think it was more of a slip of the tongue, but I'll correct it when I need to. Maybe that should be what the former swear jar is for. What is the going price for if I have to make a correction for the jar? For the Washington State Patrol Memorial Foundation.
A slip of a tongue or a correction?
Both? I would call it a correction. I won't make excuses for a correction. Okay. I think I got confused. Like 50 bucks?
Sure.
All right.
Let's do it.
We will make it Brandy's correction jar, and I will put $50 into it for having to correct myself at the top of the show. All right. Good questions and comments per the usual. Let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? We will end the show today with some sound advice from Senator Joni Ernst, caught on a hot mic.
Good job. Bottom line, never trust a man whose uncle was eaten by cannibals.
Bottom line, you can never trust a man whose uncle was eaten by cannibals. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, for your commitment to independent thought, for your commitment to understanding that it's okay to agree with people from time to time and that doesn't make them the enemy. If you have not signed up to support the show already, you can do so at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. While you're there, shop our merch store for 25% off using the promo code SANITY24. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.